Welcome to the Retail Exchange Podcast.
Hello, I'm Carl McKeever, and welcome to the latest episode of the interview series on the Retail Exchange Podcast, as we bring you insight and opinion from premier retail industry professionals and thought leaders. My guest today is Chris Lipari, Director of Product Innovation at Havi. If there is one business where time is money, in the literal sense, it is quick service restaurants, or as it's commonly known, the QSR industry. The industry's lifeblood is customer demand, something that's inherently unpredictable. Balancing supply with fluctuating demand has been an age-old challenge, leading to supply imbalances, overstocked inventory, and waste. As a result, the QSR industry is facing a whirlwind of challenges, from shifting consumer preferences to the constant demand for innovation and efficiency. It's a time ripe for transformation, and who better to shed light on navigating this intricate landscape than my guest today? Havi specializes in orchestrating seamless operations and ensuring memorable QSR experiences. Join me as we explore how Chris and his company are helping leading names in QSR to navigate the complexities of supply and demand in this fast-paced industry. Here's the interview.
Hi, Chris, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Carl. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, but what I'd like to do is to begin, first of all, can you give me an overview of the Havi business?
Of course. So Havi is a global, privately owned company, and we have a variety of different services, from supply chain planning, analytics, to marketing, to transportation logistics, and we service some of the largest QSRs out there. I'm sure you've enjoyed some of their Happy Meals, burgers, fries, shakes, and it's really an honor for us to be able to help enable some of the best supply chains in the world.
And just so I get my acronyms right, QSR is for quick service restaurants.
That's correct.
So we're talking all those kind of burger joints and those chicken joints and those places that you shouldn't, but you do and you crave.
Absolutely. The guilty pleasure.
Hey, I learned yesterday, and this might interest you, there's a particular brand which sells burgers in Australia. And they introduced a game which is really fabulous. And essentially, if you're a member on their app, you can get a notification which, if you shake this game and you're successful in the radius of that location, you will get a free burger. Mm-hmm. How good is that?
It's amazing. And you're actually touching on quite an interesting topic, which I think is a little bit more unique to QSR, and that's more dynamic promotions. And so a lot of these QSRs, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, I'm sure you have downloaded an app and you have the QSR app on your phone, and they can dynamically promote items to you based on your profile. So they're starting to get more data about you, starting to learn about you. And it's so exciting to have that amount of data, but it also poses quite a unique challenge to supply chain to be able to keep up, to be able to forecast appropriately for it. So I think it's a very interesting time we're living in.
And what we're seeing is the blending of different kind of disciplines, aren't we? You know, in this particular instance, it's about customer loyalty plus promotional activity plus gamification, mm-hmm. and actually bringing together different disciplines to ultimately, you know, serve the same purpose, and that's to serve more burgers.
That's right.
So let's think about your role and responsibilities within Havi. What do you do?
Sure. So my title is Director of Product Innovation. So much like it sounds, I manage the innovation focused on our supply chain services. And what that entails is really just making sure, because the true belief that we have at Havi is that we need to understand the customer. It all starts with the end consumer, learning what they go through, how they operate, what their biggest pain points are, and then obviously keeping a pulse on the industry, making sure we know the macro trends, and then studying some of these amazing technological advances and making sure that you have the right pairing of, hey, we're going to apply the technology that aims the value that the technology brings toward the pain points that our customers are experiencing. So a lot of what I do is just making sure that we are deploying the right products that does just that.
And give us an idea of the kind of global stretch that you're having to manage here in terms of suppliers and vendors and different brands.
Yes. So for the suppliers, vendors, different brands, I would say, so obviously the supply chain is everything from the supplier to the retailer, so the restaurant itself. So there's a lot of different steps along the way. For myself, especially the latest focus, it's been primarily North America, but my focus is expanding quite a bit to start looking at global, because we have markets in Italy and Germany and Austria all over the world. So we're starting to, the product that we're working on right now that, again, we're focused on deploying in North America, we're actually going to be looking to expand globally.
So within the QSR or quick serve restaurant market, what is the sort of level of change that's required?
Yeah, so what we like to say is change is the constant. I think everybody says that, but QSR is no different. There was this pandemic that happened, and it changed things a little bit.
I remember that.
Yeah. It was very, very impactful, I would say. And some of the things that we were noticing about the change, especially in QSR, is little things like changes in consumer preferences are occurring. And so people are starting to prefer to go through the drive-thru at QSR or to order in, or you have a lot more emphasis on the convenience of the customer. So they would prefer getting delivery or a pickup as opposed to eating in the restaurant itself. And when you think about it from a supply chain perspective, it might not seem like the way people consume products at QSR is going to impact supply chain, but it does quite a bit, because if you eat something, if you're ordering something through a drive-thru, you're more likely to order a different product than if you were just sitting in the restaurant. So even the mix of items changes. And again, in terms of forecasting and making sure that we're planning effectively, it creates what we like to call opportunities, but certainly challenges in supply chain.
And I guess the new phenomenon is also about ordering via the app,
mm-hmm.
and ordering via an app from a remote location.
That's right.
And then having that product delivered to you on the back of a motorcycle.
Yes. We've seen that quite a bit in New York, too. A lot of, because it's a lot easier to get around with bikes. But yes, even the mode of transportation for delivery is changing.
So are there other retail sectors you think that could learn from the work you're doing in QSR?
Yeah, I think they can. And so retail in general, it's quite similar, but there are unique pieces of QSR. I touched on the consumer preferences piece. I think that's pretty synonymous with the other sectors. But a big piece that we handle in supply chain as it relates to QSR is, if you think about how you make the product at QSR, if you order a burger is a perfect example. When you order a burger, you're not just ordering a burger in terms of supply chain. You're ordering the bun, the patty, the cheese, the lettuce, the tomato, whatever you put on that burger. There's a lot of raw ingredients in the recipe that you actually order. So a lot of math has to go into making sure that we understand one burger equals this amount of product. And it even goes further than that, where you have maybe somebody that's building the burger with a little bit of a heavier, more generous hand of lettuce that they put on every time, as opposed to the next worker.
I'm always choosing the guy that's more generous on the mayonnaise.
The mayonnaise, okay, as you should. So you need to pick the time in which that worker works. I see you. You have a pattern. But it is true. And so what we do is we measure over time. We start to apply analytics to measure the waste and start to predict, hey, we're starting to analyze and make sure that we know that this restaurant usually wastes this amount, this restaurant wastes this amount. So 10 burgers equals this amount of lettuce, 20 burgers equals this amount of tomatoes. And I think other sectors can just learn in terms of how to calculate waste effectively.
Of course, at NRF 2024, one of the big focuses of the event this year is all about AI. Is this an area that you feel that within QSR you can, you know, take some learnings too?
AI, you said?
Yes.
Oh, that, no, that is...
That old thing.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that. That is the common buzzword that's going around right now, and it's so critical. One thing to keep in mind is AI is so many things, and it's so important when you hear AI, because I'm sure everyone has heard it, to really get a grasp as to what it is, because the second that something becomes everything, it's nothing. So you really want to make sure
that... I think we had that with Omnichannel.
Yeah, that's a good example. But for AI, you want to have the practical use case. I'll jump a little bit, but I'll come right back. I think what was so impactful last year was the release of ChatGPT, because I think more and more people are starting to interact themselves with Gen AI and starting to get their own understanding of what it does. It's great with language, writing stories, creating content. So people are starting to understand it a little better. In terms of how we are applying it, Gen AI, machine learning, we're using it in our forecasting. So the way that we are forecasting for restaurants is actually creating profiles for each restaurant. So each individual restaurant has its own unique profile based on local area, based on what they sell, how they sell it. We create patterns within the attributes. And what's really unique that we're applying, again, with the new product, with our partnership with Kinaxis, is we're starting to understand external data sources better. And so we're using AI to do that. But what that means is, this is going to be a biased take, I will admit that, but we are very, very good at what we do for forecasting. What we are looking to improve on is what happens outside of the four walls. So we know if there's a buy one, get one, or if there's a 2 for $6, we know exactly what that impact is going to be for promotions.
So you already have an idea of the uplift.
That's right. We know exactly, yeah. We have a very good idea as to what the lift will be. But what we are trying to get better at is understanding that if there's a Bruce Springsteen concert in Springfield, Illinois, is that going to have an impact to the restaurants that are nearby that concert? If there's a Super Bowl nearby, does that impact the foot traffic? So what we're so excited about is being able to leverage AI to understand those external data sources a little bit better to move the needle on our forecasting.
And presumably you have to do that because you're dealing in fresh food. So you don't want to overorder and people are kind of having their refrigerators bulging because the stuff isn't moving.
That's right.
But similarly, you also want to be able to predict when you think that peak in traffic is going to be so you can service it.
It's so critical because lost sales in the QSR is a game changer. You can't afford it. So we take a lot of pride in being able to assure supply. But to your point, I'd say the most fun part about supply chain is that it's not easy. So it's not just making sure you can assure supply. You can't overstock the restaurant. So you have to have that perfect balance. You do need to predict the peaks and valleys so that you can make sure they have the right product.
I think one of the things that I've become very conscious of is everyone's talking about volatility. Why is volatility such a watchword for the moment?
Yeah, volatility is critical with what we do because, like we talked about the peaks and valleys, I think it's changing because of, again, we talked about the pandemic. Consumer preferences are changing. There's a lot more events. There's a lot more information at your fingertips. So the mobile app is changing even the way that people order. We're advertising a little bit better. We're understanding consumer profiles, and that's making them a little bit more attracted to go into that QSR. So again, the volatility in terms of foot traffic changes, and you need to understand that. So volatility is always a key word for QSR, and that's why you're hearing it. But one of the ways that we're trying to get our fingerprint on volatility is that we have a process called CPFR. It's an industry standard process that stands for Collaborative Planning, Forecasting, and Replenishment. And to boil it down, all it means is that we are collaborative in the way that we manage our supply chain. So it's so important when you have volatility to get diversity of thought. It's so important to be able to get perspectives from suppliers that might know a little bit more about what this promotion typically does, or from distribution centers that are experiencing a lot of order changes. So we have an organized approach to be able to collect, synthesize that information so that we can be better at predicting what will happen in the volatility.
Sounds to me like you're a company which is very heavy on data analysis, and you sound like you're collecting more and more data all the time. How do you go about that, and what kind of headaches does it cause?
It's a great question, and I think it's such an important asset to be able to have is data, but the thing that I think about is data is just noise for the most part. Data is nothing unless you can turn it into information. So this goes back a little bit to what we talked about with understanding pain points, understanding what our customer wants, because if you have the appropriate end state of what you're trying to drive, then you can turn the data in the right form to be able to give to the end users to empower their customers. So I'll touch on it again, a plug, but a great example of one of the products that we're rolling out with Kinaxis is a supply chain solution that has what we call scenario planning. And what scenario planning is, it's buzzword here, using a digital twin. So it essentially allows you to create a copy of your environment, all of the data that you have from forecasted suppliers, forecasted the restaurants, forecasted DCs. You're creating your own private replica, and you can make changes to specific parameters and then get the impact to measures almost instantaneously. So what's really powerful about that, to your point, is that you turn data into information quickly, and instead of having our team planners that in the industry spend hours and even days trying to understand what's a two-day safety stock at the restaurant impact going to be at my volume for suppliers or going to be to the volume at the distribution center.
So does that mean essentially that with the digital twin, you essentially just have to measure the variance between what you thought would happen and what actually happens?
You hit it exactly right. That's exactly it. So you're getting the deltas in between. That's what we're doing, and it's really making sure that we can get it. But the key to it is getting it quickly, because what we want to make sure, there's so many QSR changes so fast, day-to-day changes so fast, and we need to make decisions quickly. And all we can do is empower our customers to make educated decisions quickly. So we just want to empower our own planners to be able to have information quickly to give them.
How do retailers, and even within your own restaurants, turn routine tasks into more strategic opportunities?
So it's similar to that, but a great use case for us. So a lot of what we do in terms of our supply chain planning involves around the restaurants. The restaurants are everything. So I spent a few months working in the back room of a restaurant, and I'll tell you, I have the utmost respect for those workers. It is not an easy job. And so what we provide is order recommendations at the restaurant. It's part of the product that we sell. So we provide very accurate order recommendations. And what that means is, instead of having the restaurant have to spend hours trying to figure out what am I going to sell to get me to my next truck, or how much product do I need, we want them instead to just trust the system. We're looking to gain their trust, understand their pain points, so that instead of spending hours on the order, they can actually talk to customers, engage customers, drive sales, which is what we want them to be doing.
So releasing themselves of the bureaucracy and the spreadsheets enables them to kind of use the electronic tools to help them. And as you say, convert their time more productively into serving more orders.
That's perfect. That is exactly right. Yeah, because we view AI, we view advanced analytics, everything like that as an augmentation of the workers. We're just looking to make their lives better and really move them to drive sales in their business.
From the work you've been doing and the lessons that you've learned, what do you think are some of the smallest details that can make the difference between real success and just kind of a, you know, an okay result in predictive order planning?
It's a very good question. I would say connectedness. So a lot of what we've noticed struggles in traditional supply chains, I would say, is that there's silos that exist. And the whole point of a supply chain is to have connected planning throughout. And so the second that you introduce one disconnect to that supply chain, you have a lot of ramifications that you have to deal with. So every company, for the most part, has its own supply chain planning, whether it's complex or whether they're using Excel to forecast. Everyone has their own system. But if you have a system for forecasting at the restaurant that's not connected to the system that's directly planning at the DC, immediately you introduce a disconnect. Immediately you introduce bullwhip that has a lot of ramifications. The further upstream you go in the supply chain, the more impact it has. Because you can introduce incredible AI, incredible technology, really move the needle on your forecasting, which is so critical. But if it's not connected, it doesn't matter how accurate you are at the restaurant level if the distribution center is doing its own thing. It doesn't matter how accurate you are at the distribution center if the supplier is doing its own thing. So I'd say the little details is making sure that the whole supply chain connects.
And what do you do to foster that kind of communication and that smoothness of information supply between all those different partners and pieces?
Two things. The one is what I talked about a little bit with CPFR. It's making sure that we have an organized forum to be able to, if we have an event upcoming, we get all the stakeholders together, we collect their feedback, we make sure that everybody's aware of what the forecast is, why the forecast is what it is, and let them weigh in on what that looks like in the plans if things come up. So it's more of an organized approach to planning. But the second piece, so that's more of process and people. The second piece is technology. And so what we're doing with our supply chain planning system is everything is connected. It all starts at the restaurant. So as I mentioned, we forecast at the restaurant. You introduce other parameters like shipping schedules, inventory, safety stock, and that builds an order that the restaurant can be confident in. But that order is direct demand to the DC. So instead of having a different signal at the DC, that whatever their proposals are at the restaurant, that's their demand signal. And then you go through the same process. You build what their order is based on their forecast, based on their safety stock, and then the same thing happens to the supplier. So we are connected, what we call concurrent planning, concurrency. Everything is connected from the beginning of the supply chain to the end.
And presumably, the longer you do this and the more cycles this go through, the more patterns that get formed for informing the future predictive ordering.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's an exponential growth opportunity.
AI has a huge future, no doubt. But will humans still have a place in all this? You know, do we still matter?
We do still matter. Yeah, we do. And the way I like to think about AI is as a steering wheel. So we're still sitting behind it. We're still making sure that it's going in the right direction. But we view it a lot as an augmentation. So again, making sure that we can get our planners out of the rudimentary tasks that they have to do to be able to turn data into information and instead be more strategic actors to be able to take the information and be thought leaders with our customers so that that's where the value they can provide. That's what we want AI to drive.
So people will still add the added value through experience or through connectivity or engagement?
Absolutely. So I don't want to belittle AI in terms of how we're using it because it's amazing and it's growing so much. But our secret sauce at Javi is the people, without a doubt. The decades of experience that our people have that they bring, we just want to give them the information to be able to act on that experience a little bit better.
I ask this question to different people and brands, you know, when we're doing different shows. And that's often the answer is that, you know, you rely on the technology to do the kind of the heavy lifting and it will still be people that bring personality into the equation. That bubble was well and truly burst for me when I was in Dubai not so long ago. And I got a barista-made coffee from a robot. But it wasn't a robot that just fulfilled the act of making me the drink. The robot also entertained us as it did it. And I was thinking, this is a little bit too close for comfort here. Yeah.
You have two very different reactions, I think, from people. It's very polarizing, I would say. Some people, we're actually finding more and more people want that experience at the drive-thru. They want less, which was fascinating to us. They want less human interaction and more. That's why you see a lot of people go to the kiosk. You see a lot of people would prefer interacting with a robot. But I think it's very dependent on what you're doing. So to your point, maybe there is a little bit of a barrier that we don't cross there, and entertainment might be that barrier for you.
The bit that made me really happiest, though, about the whole scenario, taking to one side the fact it was great coffee, is that the robot didn't ask me my name so he could write it on the side of the cup. I was really joyful about that.
See, isn't that funny that there is little things that you, and that's why it is so important. You want to learn about what people want. You want to learn about what users, the end user, wants, because a really, probably my favorite quote of all time is something that Henry Ford said back in the day. And he said, if he would have asked his consumers what they wanted, they would have said they wanted a faster horse. And the whole point of that is you want to understand why people want what they want. You want to understand the true pain point. So if he would have asked the people really what they want and why they want it, they would have said, I just want to get from point A to point B faster. And then you can work with that and design something better. But if somebody would have asked you, what are you really looking for? If you're looking for a personalized experience at a coffee or a barista, you would have said, just put my name on the cup. And that would have been the solution for that.
Yeah, and I would definitely be not happy about the situation. So global supply chains are under increasing scrutiny. You know, there's an increasing recognition of the environmental cost, of course. You know, none of us can really bury our head in the sand on this because we see the world changing around us. What do you think is the importance, I guess, of trying to work even harder to double down on trying to minimize the impact of all of these kind of environmental concerns? And they're multifaceted and complex, you know, within the supply chains we operate.
Without a doubt, I think it's the single most important thing that we can do as supply chains, especially with just the importance of our environment and our earth that we all share. We all have a responsibility to be able to take care of it. One really interesting thing that we're doing in one of our European markets, actually, is that we have a lot of data, as you mentioned, and data is power. And so we want to put that data to use for good and sustainability. So one of the things that we're doing is that we're having the restaurants measure the amount that they're wasting, but we're creating a scorecard. And so there's a lot of power in the competitive human spirit. Even it doesn't matter what it is. So what we're doing is we're showcasing how much each store is wasting. And then it becomes a little bit of a competition between stores, and they're looking to improve. But that also tells them.
And is this a pull approach? You're trying to bring people into this conversation rather than, you know, mandating that they make certain changes and you're putting penalties on
them.
Right. If they're not.
That's perfect. That's right. It's a gamification. So you want to make sure people don't feel like they're forced to do it. It's a game. We wanted to make it a little fun and a little competition to do something really good. And there is a bottom line, and that does matter. So to owners of those restaurants, we want to showcase via metrics the impact that how much waste they're having is on their costs, because the more that you waste, the more it costs you. So making sure that we're bringing the right metrics to the forefront to be better in our sustainability.
You're clearly someone who's very engaged in what you do. You can see that. You're absolutely thriving on it. I mean, there is a sparkle and twinkle in your eye with every answer you give, which is great to see. But what keeps you awake at night? What are some of those big challenges that you really want to get underway?
So my beautiful wife is pregnant, and we're right around the corner. So it's our firstborn, so I'm already thinking, do I have enough diapers to last me through the first day that this baby is born? And I want to be the best dad that I can be. But I know that's not why you're asking the question. So I would say,
well, look, firstly, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's incredible. I'm made up for you.
I appreciate that. And so, but in terms of what keeps me up at night, because there's a fear, you can tell, and there's a right to be fearful about AI. And it's a common buzzword. People are afraid of it. I'd say for me, the thing that keeps me up at night about AI is the governance of AI. I think it's so new. People are starting to learn about what it can do in terms of where it's going. And you'll this is well written. I think there's two potential destinations that AI is going to take us. It's either going to be really amazing and a great augmentation of humans, or it's going to be very bad. So for me, it's just making sure, because I truly believe AI is just what you make it. That's why it's so exciting that people are starting to understand AI a little bit better, because I think it's so important that we get more feedback, more governance on the AI so that we can.
And I guess the more people that become aware, not just of the amazing things it can do, but the potential risks and threats that it could also bring with it.
It's critical. It's critical. And we as an industry, we as leaders need to make sure that we are on top of it and make sure that we can put the guidance in there before it's too late.
Well, I'm so pleased I asked you that question now, because if I'd said what keeps you awake at night in a couple of months' time, I think it would have been a different answer, right?
It will certainly be a different answer. It might be a couple cries in the middle of the night. So, yes, thank you for asking now while I'm still awake.
And that kind of that sparkle that you have now, I think may diminish over time when your eyes get more tired.
I think I'm going to have to rely on a lot of coffees. I think and I'm hoping my name will be written on them. So that's going to be... That's going to be big.
Excellent. Listen, final question. What's the future within the QSR sector in 2024 and beyond? You know, what do you see as being some of those big milestones which are coming?
Great question. I would say, obviously, it would be tough for me not to say AI. It is the buzzword. It is the future. And I would say more around language within QSR. So there's a lot that you can do with generative AI around language. So there's a lot of different interaction with even just business users to be able to potentially pull reports on a simple, think about it as a Google search. So if you're Googling, show me the top 10 reports or show me, you can do the same thing within QSR except pull business reports. There's no reason business users couldn't interact in a way that a common Google user interacts. So I'd say a huge growth within 2024 will be more on the generative AI use in business.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Chris. I've been in conversation with Chris Lipari, who is Director of Product Innovation for Havi. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Retail Exchange podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
You've been listening to the Retail Exchange podcast. Subscribe online at theretailexchange.co.uk and join the debate #RetailExchange. Thanks for listening.